Court of Appeals in and for the Southern Judicial Circuit. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All persons having business before this honorable court are admonished to draw near and give their attention as the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument is Humphreys versus Cracker Barrel. Ms. Krull.
May it please the court. My name is Angel Krull, and I represent the appellant, Hedrick Humphreys. Mr. Humphreys, who was African-American, was a manager at a Cracker Barrel restaurant and was terminated only 1 week after complaining about racist comments in the workplace and about other discrimination against himself and against another coworker who was also African-American. But before I even reach the merits of Mr. Humphreys' claims, there's the broader issue of whether retaliation claims can be brought under 42 U.S.C. Section 1981, an issue raised by Cracker Barrel for the first time on appeal, which means that because this issue was not raised below, it has been waived for appeal. However, even despite the waiver, Cracker Barrel is just wrong that Section 1981 does not support retaliation claims. The sole case that Cracker Barrel relies on for this proposition is a recent decision decided by this court, Hart versus Transit Management of Racine. Hart relied on an 11th Circuit case, Little versus United Technologies. Those two cases, Hart and Little, both involve a very specific fact pattern, and neither of those cases hold that Section 1981 does not support retaliation claims. And both Hart and Little there involve white plaintiffs who brought retaliation claims for being retaliated against for opposing discrimination against an African-American coworker. However, here we have an African-American plaintiff.
I don't understand why factual differences should matter. This is a legal question.
Yes, Your Honor, it is a legal question.
There's either an anti-retaliation principle or there isn't, and we can then decide whether it was properly applied. But if there isn't such a principle, the fact that, you know, that now it's Tuesday doesn't affect that, does it?
I agree with you, Your Honor. However, Little, in particular, did hold on the facts. But going to your issue about whether or not Section 1981 has an opposition clause like Title VII does, no, Your Honor, it does
Which
not.
It doesn't.
Yes, it
and
does not.
Normally, we think differently worded statutes actually have different effects.
Yes, Your Honor. And I would say that that particular fact, that there is no written opposition clause, does not mean that Section 1981 has no opposition claims or retaliation claims. And I would point to the recent decision by the Supreme Court in Jackson, held last year, and also a 1969 decision by the Supreme Court, Sullivan, particularly in Jackson, involved a Title IX case where a male high school basketball coach brought a Title IX claim because the girls' team was getting unequal funding. And there, Justice O'Connor, writing for the court, held that even though Title IX did not have a specific opposition clause written within the statute, that retaliation for opposing discrimination based on that statute is implied in Title IX, which is the same analysis that can be placed in Section 1981. And going back to the Jackson case, which
I thought your argument was simpler than that. I thought it was just that if you didn't have some concept of retaliation, then 1981 would be empty, because any time someone complained about racial discrimination, the employer would say, well, I don't like complainers, so out you go. Now, didn't Judge Cuddy say that in an opinion?
Yes, absolutely. That is what Judge Cuddy said. And that is the reason why Section 19(1) does have to have a retaliation element to it. Otherwise, employers would be free to discriminate against any plaintiff who asserts
like,
a 1981.
That sounds like a reason why something should be enacted rather than a reason why whatever was enacted has a particular meaning. One, we don't want to pretend that all statutes deal with all ills.
No, Your Honor, but I think that the discrimination element would be meaningless if there was no retaliation element.
No, it wouldn't be meaningless.
I disagree with Your Honor.
It would be worth less. All right? There is a difference between worth nothing and worth less. Is there not?
Yes, Your Honor, there is a difference there. But I would go back and point to the Supreme Court. I would go back and point to the Supreme Court decision that was just decided last year that did distinguish and did actually use this analysis that Judge Posner has raised. Justice O'Connor pointed to that particular analysis, saying that the discrimination element would be meaningless, would have no punch to it if you can retaliate.
Well, it wouldn't be meaningless. I mean, that just doesn't get me. But I mean, maybe you should stand on your forfeiture argument rather than stand on a 5-4 decision written by somebody who's no longer there.
I am standing on my forfeiture argument. I do believe that's the strongest argument, but I also believe that under Supreme Court precedent that we cannot read Section 1991 as not having a retaliation element.
Well, if you want to pursue this, if your argument were correct, then the Supreme Court would have said there is an anti-retaliation rule in every federal statute. But, of course, the reason why Jackson was 5-4 is that the Supreme Court has held that there is in some statutes and there is not in other statutes. And on your line of argument, all of the Supreme Court's decisions saying that there is not an anti-retaliation rule in other federal statutes, they're all wrong. Well, you don't want to say the only way to accept my position is to disagree with the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court in Jackson is distinguishing some federal statutes that have them from others that don't.
Yes,
you don't,
sir,
seem to be in the business of distinguishing.
Your Honor, I'm not saying that my argument applies to every single federal statute.
Yes,
but
it does. If a statute is meaningless, if it lacks a retaliation rule, then all the Supreme Court decisions saying that particular statutes don't have anti-retaliation rules in them must be wrong, because they render all those statutes meaningless.
No, that's where the hard case. If you have a retaliation provision, you can be, you know, not a member of the protected class. You can be a white person complaining about discrimination against a black person, and there's no question of you're being discriminated against on racial grounds. So that clearly we don't have here, right?
That's right.
If you're white, you can't you can't invoke this on behalf of a black person. You're saying, and Judge Cudahy said, if you're black, well, that, you know, narrow sense of retaliation is necessary to make the statute minimally effective.
Yes, Your Honor. I do believe that because we do have a black plaintiff here who was raising a retaliation claim based on complaints he made against discrimination against himself and also against another black coworker, that the Hart decision simply doesn't apply, because the Hart decision was limited to that particular fact pattern that you just mentioned. But moving on.
What about the merits? Don't you want to say something about them?
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Humphreys has brought a retaliation claim under Section 1981. The only contested issue on appeal is whether the protected conduct, his complaints, actually caused his termination. I don't think there's any question that he actually complained or that he was terminated. Those two are established. But causation is the element that we are concerned with today. We have five pieces of evidence here that prove causation. The first piece of evidence is the suspicious timing.
Let me just ask you, in case your time runs out, is it conceded or you know, established that Humphreys left the safe open, or is that a contested fact?
That is a contested fact.
You said he didn't leave it open?
Yes, at his deposition he testified unequivocally that he specifically had a memory of closing it the night before.
And there was no investigation conducted relative to that, correct?
Absolutely not.
And what do you think of this distinction? It's the idea that it was left open at night versus left open in the day.
I don't believe that it's a significant decision, distinction, because leaving the safe open, no matter whether it's during the day when there's many people around to actually take something from the safe, or during the nighttime when there's no one there other than a night maintenance person, is bad either
where
way.
Where is the safe?
It's in the manager's office.
In the manager's office.
Either way, overnight or during the day, it doesn't matter. It's a bad thing. Managers shouldn't leave the safe open either during the day or at night. In my opinion, it's a bigger risk to leave it open during the day because there are more people around who could happen by the safe, see it open, and take something from it. At night, there's very few people around, only the night maintenance person.
And this was based on just a statement made to the manager, correct?
Yes, there was a statement when a white associate manager came in the next day. This was an associate manager, Joe Stinnett, who Mr. Humphreys had just accused of discriminating against a waitress at the store. Came in the next day, supposedly saw the door to the safe open, and then told his manager about it. There was no other evidence of the safe being open. Nothing was missing from the safe. He didn't pull in any other employee to also witness the safe being open. He didn't document it in any way. He didn't file a report saying the safe was open. Nothing written saying the safe was open. All he did was supposedly witness that it was open, tell his boss, and his boss then told his boss, the district manager, who ultimately terminated Humphreys the next day, or a couple days later, based solely on the word of someone whose credibility was in question because this person had just been accused of discrimination and definitely had a motive to concoct this story against Mr. Humphreys. And when Mr. Christensen learned that the safe had been left open solely on the word of this person whose credibility was questioned, he didn't even interview that person directly. He heard that information secondhand through an intermediate manager. Based solely on this secondhand knowledge, he immediately decided to terminate Mr. Humphreys.
And this Christensen, he was the one that Humphreys had earlier reported race discrimination.
Yes, absolutely.
He had made his complaints to him, and he's the same person who hadn't acted on them.
Right. The first time Mr. Humphreys brought his issues to Mr. Christensen, Mr. Christensen did absolutely nothing to investigate those. Mr. Humphreys had said to Mr. Christensen that there was a manager in the store making racist comments, and also that he had been receiving discipline from this manager that he felt was discriminatory. Mr. Christensen admitted at his deposition that Mr. Humphreys did one time come to me and complain about discrimination, but when asked, "What did you do about that?" he couldn't recall doing anything in response, even though Cracker Barrel does have set policies as to how you investigate such a complaint. There's an investigation log you have to fill out. There's an open door report. There's specific procedures. And Mr. Christensen knew about those procedures because in the past he had put them into effect in response to a sexual harassment complaint. So he knew what to do. He just chose not to do that here. So when when he came with this knowledge about the safe being open a short time later, it's with that history that he made that decision to terminate Mr. Humphreys. I see that I'm into my rebuttal time, so I'd like to save the remainder of my time.
Okay, thanks, Ms. Krull. Mr. Kunstler?
May it please the Court, my name is John Kunstler, and I'm attorney on behalf of Appalee Seabox West. The district court properly held that Humphreys had failed to establish both his claims of retaliation and discrimination under Section 1981. Mr. Humphreys, during his employment with Cracker Barrel, was supervised by three different general managers. Each of those three managers reported to the district manager, Christensen, that Humphreys' performance was not where it needed to be, and certain of those managers...
Are you going to discuss this question of the scope of 1981?
Sure. This court in Hart...
What about the waiver issue, first, or forfeiture issue?
I do not believe that the waiver issue has any merit. The law in this matter developed after the briefing at the district court.
The law developed after? You mean the statute was amended?
What I mean was the Hart decision came down.
No, you got favorable authority, but that doesn't excuse failing to make a point in the district court.
Well, I think it was the Hart decision most certainly was a change in the authority of the circuit. And I think a defendant does not have to anticipate that the law
certainly
will certainly
do.
Change down
the
road.
The law is what it is. You can make arguments about it. You're not excused from making arguments in the district court just because you don't have favorable appellate precedent yet.
No, that's correct.
And the Supreme Court has held that, I must say, repeatedly.
No, absolutely. The Hart decision came down after the briefing at the district court level, and it was raised after that time on appeal. Since that time, I think the decision in Hart was relatively clear that it was a change from a prior precedent. Since that time, the district courts of the Northern District of Illinois have started to adopt Hart and have ruled exactly in the way that would apply to these facts, such that is that there is no retaliation claim under Section 1981. So I think the issue was not waived, and that the Hart decision is relatively clear that plaintiff's retaliation
claim wasn't waived. The question is whether it was forfeited.
I do not believe it was forfeited. I believe that a defendant has a right to raise the issue on appeal.
Your argument must be that it would have been pointless to argue this to the district court because he would have felt bound by
what?
Earlier cases or what?
I believe in looking at the district court opinion since Hart, district courts in the Northern District of Illinois.
The question is, do you have a good reason not to have raised this in the district court? And one good reason would be that there was nothing the district court could do because it would have no handle for your claim. Is that what you're arguing?
I believe that the district court, had it been raised in district court, the precedent in the Seventh Circuit at that time that the district court was going to decide the merits would have been contrary to Hart.
So there wouldn't have been any point in raising it. Is that what you're saying?
Not that there wouldn't be a point, but I don't think it would have been
proper. Well, if there would have been a point, you should have done it, right?
But I don't think it would have been proper at that point in time to raise the issue.
What would you say about Monsanto against Sprayright, where the Supreme Court was asked to overrule its resale price maintenance cases, its own price maintenance cases, and it held that the issue was forfeited because it hadn't been raised in the district court, even though district courts can't overrule the Supreme Court? The Supreme Court said if you don't raise a particular point in the district court, you can't ask us to overrule our own cases. Now, isn't your situation a fortiori?
I think the distinction there is that there, just as Joseph Posner pointed out, that there was an accepted level of authority in the district court at the time the briefing was done, so it was not raised in. The Hart decision changed the landscape of that so that it was...
I don't understand. Right. If the Supreme Court holds... that a point is forfeited if you don't raise it in the district court, even if there is contrary authority precluding the district court from accepting your argument, you still must raise it. That's the holding of Monsanto. Your case doesn't have any contrary authority precluding you from raising the point, so your case looks like it's a fortiori. Now, what would be the distinction from Monsanto?
I believe the distinction just has to be that there was a body of case law in the Seventh Circuit. It was not raised at the district court. That is correct.
That's not a distinction from Monsanto, except that the fact that the case law is weaker.
I guess the distinction has to be is that I believe a defendant will retain the opportunity to raise an issue regarding a change in law post-briefing at the district court on the appellate level. If I could just address a couple quick factual...
Jumping over the forfeiture point, so what about the substance of the 1981? Isn't there a difference between, you know, opposition in the sense you could be white, you could be complaining about employers' behavior toward other people, and complaining about behavior toward yourself? And the problem, obviously, is that a person could say, well, I discriminate against whoever, and if you sue me, I fire you because I don't like people who complain. Right? And then what's left? Well, you still have your anti-discrimination suit, but you wouldn't have any damages to speak of because the firing would rest on this independent, you know, hostility to complainers.
Right. I think the distinction would be, as Judge Easterbrook pointed out before, it's not going to be an empty statute. It's going to be a limited statute.
No, it's really going to be completely empty because as soon as the rule is well established, employers will realize any time someone files a 1981 suit against them or says he's going to file a 1981 suit against them, you fire the person quickly. That way he doesn't have any damages for the 1981 violation.
If courts were to decide... defendant.
Right. What's to prevent that tactic?
It all depends on the interpretation of the statute, and I think
before... No. Your interpretation of the statute, isn't that an entirely lawful tactic?
I think if it's not in the statute, it's not...
Answer my question. Under your interpretation of the statute, is that a lawful tactic?
If the statute is interpreted as Hart interpreted, yes.
I'm asking you a yes or no question. Under your interpretation of the statute, is the tactic that I've described lawful?
And I guess I just have to point out my interpretation.
Would you to answer yes or no, please, and then you can explain. You
I think the answer.
Qualify your answer.
I think the answer.
Say yes or no.
I think the answer is yes. That if it does not include a retaliation claim, then certainly.
Okay, your answer is yes. Fine. Now you can move on to something else.
No, and I just think under it's correct that under the interpretation that Hart put on 1981, that if it needs to be changed, then it can be something
that's
legislated.
That's a separate case. That's complaining about someone else. I mean, that clearly is not in this statute.
I think the answer is yes, because it would certainly be a limited statute. That's correct. If I may turn just brief back to some of the facts, I want to make sure and point out that Humphreys was supervised by three separate supervisors, general managers at the stores. They each reported to the...
But if you have him denying that he left the safe open, and if you have the, you know, enthusiastic performance evaluation that he'd had until recently, isn't that enough to create a tribal issue? It doesn't mean he's going to win or anything like that, but why isn't that a tribal issue?
I believe absolutely not, because Mr. Humphrey's performance over these three separate managers was actually very similar. His first manager, who was an African-American, who he doesn't claim discriminated against him in any fashion, told Mr. Humphreys in several performance evaluations that he needed to be more knowledgeable of policies. He was concerned about Humphreys' follow-up and accountability.
Well, everyone can be better, but they were favorable evaluations.
But it keeps going on. He was concerned about his ability
to... Why isn't this something you'd argue to a jury?
Because I think Mr. Humphreys' performance evaluation over all of his managers. In fact, Mr. Sessions...
Well, why didn't they fire him earlier, then, if he's no good?
Well, I can't get inside the manager's head. The fact that they didn't fire him earlier when they had opportunities to do so...
You can't get into the manager's heads. I thought that's what we would have a trial for, right?
Well, I don't think the trial is necessary here, because these managers were all treating him very similarly over the time. Mm-hmm. There was a report that he left a safe open. That associate manager reported to the general manager. They discussed it. That general manager reported to the district manager. They discussed
it. Right, but that Stinnett, who left the safe unlocked, he didn't get fired. And it was just a question of the timing, time of day.
The issue there is that there was no knowledge, and there's no evidence in the record that the district manager ever knew that Stinnett or Mr. Dowd had ever left a safe open. And beyond that, there is no evidence in the record that Mr. Stinnett, one, knew that Humphreys had ever complained about his conduct, or that a meeting had been set up between Humphreys and Dowd to actually discuss that matter. That Mr. Stinnett specifically testified that he had no knowledge of that issue. There's also
he testified. But does that have to be taken as true?
No, but I think if Mr. Humphreys is trying to say that Mr. Stinnett had an evil motive in lying about leaving the safe open, that doesn't hold up when Mr. Stinnett doesn't know that Mr. Humphreys complained about him, and he doesn't know that there's been a meeting set up to talk about this. Excuse me?
Because he said so?
Yes, the evidence in the record shows that Mr. Stinnett did not have that knowledge.
No, no, no. What you're saying is he said he didn't know that.
That's correct.
That's the evidence in the record, right?
There is no... That's correct, Your Honor. He didn't. He said that he had no knowledge of that. There's no evidence to the contrary in the record, to my reading of the record.
Except we've got Humphreys. Well, this is a different matter, but Humphreys denies it. Humphreys denies that he left the safe open. There were no reports filed or anything. You agree with that? There was a procedure that should have been followed. It wasn't followed.
That is correct, that Mr. Humphreys.
So that's a big problem, isn't it?
But the issue is the reasonable belief, the honest belief by Christensen as to whether or not that safe had been left open. Christensen got a report from his general manager at that store telling him that the associate manager had said that the store safe had been left open, that that when he came in, he checked it to make sure that Humphreys was the person responsible for that. And there's no reason in the record to think that Christensen did not honestly believe Stinnett's report. Moreover, there are...
Well, wait a second. Didn't Christian know about Humphreys' complaint about Stinnett?
Christensen did know about...
Wouldn't that be a strong reason to want to investigate Stinnett's accusation?
I believe that Humphreys had complained to Mr. Christensen about... And I think I want to point this out very clearly, as we point out in our brief. When asked specifically in his deposition as to what he was complaining about with respect to retaliation, Mr. Humphreys said that he was terminated for complaining about the termination of Venus Green. Did not state that he was being terminated for any complaints on his own behalf.
But you don't dispute that Christensen never acted on those complaints he made on his own behalf.
Christensen stated that on one occasion Mr. Humphreys came to him and said, "I feel like I'm being discriminated against." Christensen specifically testified Well, who, when, how? Asking him, you know, for some details, and he testified in his deposition that Humphreys was unable to give him any details with respect to that, and he asked him when he had more details to come back and follow up. Christensen did not follow up at that time because he didn't have anything to go off of. It was not a violation of Cracker Barrel policy to not fill out a form, to not go through the procedures when there was nothing to go off of.
What about the complaint he made about the server being fired? That did get to Christensen.
That did get to Christensen, and that was when Christensen told Mr. Humphreys to set up a meeting with his general manager to discuss the issue. Christensen, I don't believe that there's anything in the record that indicates that Christensen knew when that meeting was going to occur and knew the specifics of it. What he does know is that a general manager that came to him through with a report from an associate manager saying that a safe had been left open. This was Mr. Humphreys over his African-American manager, Stinnett, or Sessions, over Cardin, and over Dowd, had received reports from all these managers that Mr. Humphreys had problems with asset protection issues, with security issues, and he had most recently been written up for leaving the chain off a front door. Again, another security issue. Mr. Christensen did not make an immediate decision to terminate Mr. Humphreys either. It was a two-day delay. He asked the general manager to talk to the company's loss prevention department, and then only then, based upon...
Well, are you saying if all this evidence had been presented in a trial, you would be entitled to judgment as a matter of law? Is that what you're arguing?
That's correct, Your Honor. I think the judgment would clearly be entered in favor of Seabox West here. But I don't think it's an issue that needs to get to trial because the issues just aren't... He's not meeting his prima facie case. He's not showing similarly situated employees were treated better. He's failed to show that he was meeting his legitimate expectations as an employer. He failed to show there was any pretext. I think one point that needs to be pointed out with respect to similarly situated is there's no evidence that Dowd or Stinnett were that Christensen ever knew that they had left a safe open. And in fact, if you read the policy carefully, there are expectations within that policy that the safe can be open during the day. This is a safe. It can be open. Sometimes there's things in it. Sometimes there's not. There's a big distinction between having a safe open during a day when it is in a manager's office and locked and there are lots of people there, as opposed to leaving it open at night. But the policy specifically provides that there may be times when that safe can be open during the day, which is exactly what Humphreys is alleging that Stinnett, or that Dowd and Stinnett had done. There's also no evidence in the record, you know, there was an argument made by Mr. Humphreys, that Mr. Humphreys was replaced by a Caucasian. The manager, district manager Christensen, indicated that he thought someone might have replaced him, but he didn't really know. And Stinnett went on to testify in his deposition that at the time Humphreys was discharged, the management staff at the store was understaffed. So, of course, they were in a hiring mode to replace people. And, in fact, Stinnett testified that he thought an African-American manager he thought an African-American manager had replaced Humphreys. So I think the district court was correct in finding that Mr. Humphreys had not met his prima facie case and that there was no evidence that he was treated any differently, and more specifically, that there was any level of pretext. And here's showing that Mr. Christensen did not honestly believe the reasons that were presented to him for Mr. Humphreys' termination.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Consular.
Thank you.
Ms. Krull, do you have anything further?
I think what's clear here is that there are factual issues that need to be addressed at trial. Opposing counsel's argument here specifically addressed a bunch of facts that are disputed. First of all, he claims that Mr. Stinnett had no knowledge that Mr. Humphreys had complained that Stinnett had fired Ms. Green based on her race. However, we submitted an affidavit by another associate manager, Roberta Moore, who testified that she was present when Mr. Humphreys complained about Mr. Stinnett and that Stinnett knew that Mr. Humphreys was complaining. So we not only have Mr. Humphreys saying that Stinnett knew, we have an independent third party, another associate manager, saying that, yes, Stinnett knew. So Stinnett can deny it all he wants, but that's just a factual issue that a jury has to decide. Also, another factual issue raised was whether or not Mr. Humphreys was replaced by a Caucasian, which is evidence of pretext under the case law. When asked at his deposition, Mr. Christensen When I asked him who replaced Mr. Humphreys, immediately he said Bill DeLarme, and I asked him what his race was, and he said Caucasian. Then he hesitated a little bit and said, well, Bill DeLarme, I think. He never said, I don't know. He said, I think. And we also...
Who was testifying? Christensen?
That was Christensen. And also, Mr. Humphreys submitted an affidavit also testifying that after he was terminated, he went back to the store to talk to another employee, and he saw Bill DeLarme there acting as an associate manager. And Bill DeLarme wasn't an associate manager when Mr. Humphreys worked there. He had just started once Mr. Humphreys had been fired. Those two facts alone is enough to get to a jury as to whether or not a Caucasian replaced Mr. Humphreys. Now, one particular fact that hasn't been raised yet is Mr. Christensen's response when Mr. Humphreys raised the issue of Ms. Green's termination. Mr. Christensen's response was, Rick, you're going outside of the management group here because the white managers didn't believe that Ms. Green's termination was discriminatory. And that particular statement is also evidence of discrimination and retaliation here. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Krell. Thank you to both counsel. Next case for argument is...